Good morning, good morning. MC Blair here. Having a little late here. Let's see. Could you guys see how you're doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, goody. That worked. Do you hear yourself, Janae?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't.
Okay. Let's see here. Those are on. On. Say something.
Hello.
No.
Is there an on switch?
That's right here. Try that.
Hello?
No. Okay.
We'll roll with the punches.
We will roll with the punches. And we are going to be talking with Robert Harley and Janae Libby this morning. Robert Harley is Market Street Wine. Janae Libby is Audacious Food Talk for Gluttons podcast. Wonderful thing. And great product she puts out, too. And so we're going to be talking to Robert first. So if you guys, that mic is actually not hooked up at this time. So when we get back, we can just kind of share that one.
Sure,
is that cool? Awesome. We'll work it out. So first thing I like to talk about is headlines. Beep, 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 beep. I'm going to find a
That's good. I like that.
Thanks. But this first one is really great. It's grant money awarded to Charlottesville's local food hub, which is great.
Oh, awesome.
The conservation fund comes from sponsored by CSX, a big travel transportation company, trains and ships and all that. They give grants between $5,000 and $10,000. It's support the transportation of healthy food.
Oh, cool.
And so that's why the goal for the grant program is to help local food organizations fill in the gaps and enhance their ability to provide healthy local food to nearby communities.
As said,
and that was Katie Allen, who's the director of the Conservation Fund Leadership Network. Yeah. Well, of course, the local food hub, for all you out there who don't know about it, is their mission is to partner with Virginia farmers to increase community access to local food. And that's what we talk about here all the time, community-supported agriculture, very important. They provide and support services for infrastructure and market opportunities that connect people with food grown close to home. The grant funds, they will use them to install additional cold storage at the local food hub. So that's a really good thing, guys. Thanks.
Yeah.
I interviewed local food hubs.
Oh, did you really? Oh, was it Lisa or who was?
Laura Brown.
Laura Brown.
Laura Brown, yeah. Terrific podcast.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
The pharmacy program that they do over there where they take local produce and get it to folks who have health issues and teach them how to use the produce and cook it.
Oh, my gosh.
So that their health gets better.
So food is medicine.
Exactly.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, it is, you know. And the next one I want to talk about was biodynamics. They say that's the next trend. I found that interesting because I've known about biodynamics for a long time now, and it is now becoming a trend, they say. And, of course, that's based on Rudolf Steiner's concept of the 20s. And basically, the biodynamic approach to grape growing, since we're going to talk about that today, sees the vineyard as an ecological whole, not just rows of grapevines, but the soil beneath them. And it's all about the soil, folks, which we have preached here since the beginning. The soil is an organism in its own right, and so many people don't think about that. The other flora and fauna in the area growing together interdependently, linking growing and harvesting to the phases of the moon and the planets. It also might mean burying cow manure in a cow's horn over the winter, unearthing it in the spring, diluting a small amount of the substance in 34 liters of water, very homeopathic, which and then stirring it, which they call dimetizing it, by stirring it by hand, alternating directions for an hour or so, and then spraying the mixture over one's vineyard. This is the, if you're going, the literal translation of biodynamic growing.
Yes.
The most effective argument for biodynamics is that wines produced employing it are more evocative of the place they're grown.
Quite true.
And I believe that's called terroir.
It is.
All right. So, Robert, do you find them better or at least equal to what's, considered better or?
Well, they are more evocative, and they are more alive, and they are more intriguing and more soulful. you know, some people like that and some people don't. Hmm. Because some people want wines that are just more about fruit.
And I see.
They like the more traditional, you know, wines that, that don't have that kind of oddity, or evocativeness. But they are definitely more intriguing and more soulful and more interesting.
Ah.
That's what I like.
Oh, good. Yeah, they say that, I looked it up, I said Joseph Drouin in the Burgundy region and Deloge Vineyards in Sonoma are experimenting with that. You carry some of those, don't you?
I don't stock either of those right now, but I have a lot of small family wineries who are biodynamic.
Oh, okay.
And you are starting to see it being adopted by more middle-sized wineries. The largest, you know, and more industrial scale, not.
Right, right.
In fact, I just saw a lawsuit filed against some of these very large industrial national brands who have high levels of arsenic in their wine. So if you ever needed a reason not to drink banal industrial wines, there's another reason.
Well, and of course, arsenic being a naturally occurring heavy metal, but in its naturally occurring form, there's usually not a whole lot of it, is
there? No.
What are they adding?
I just heard about this last night, and so I haven't really, glanced at it. It's,
Wow. Well, I know that they don't put any clarifiers or added sulfites, sulfite obviously being another naturally occurring property, but they don't add any, right,
There's different regimes, and it gets a little confusing
as to
how much sulfur you can add. Organic wines, you can add sulfur, which is basically all wines always have and always will have sulfur to preserve it. Otherwise, we would have to drink the wines within 6 months.
I see.
And so there are many wineries who are organic and biodynamic who want to do as little as possible, to the wine. And so they add as little sulfites or none, but you have to have a very clean and a very, very much attention to detail to be able to do that. But many of these guys add as little as possible because they don't want to intervene.
Oh, okay.
So,
Well, they said that the certifications in France are growing by 10% to 15% a year for the last 10 years, and this year it was 20%. So
the market is changing, and there are many small wineries I deal with who are organic, and I know they're organic,
right,
or biodynamic, but they're not certified because it costs thousands of dollars to be certified.
I know.
And but the market is changing, and it's becoming a badge of honor and a marketing thing. Which is good that you have that, you know, AB, you know, agricultural biologique in France or other certification symbols on the label.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Well, I know one certification over here, which doesn't have anything to do with wine, but it's certified grass farm for cows and other, you know, pastured pork and poultry. Doesn't cost anything.
Great.
But it's very difficult to get.
Sure.
You know, but at least it takes the corruption out of it by not costing anything, you know, or potential.
Do you anything to help the farmer?
Yeah, that's true. Do you see anything? Do you see prices going up due to more labor intensive operations, or do you see that much in the wine
industry?
I haven't
noticed that as a trend.
Okay. And we talked about that. So it says, the point score. That's something that, you know, people say, I only buy things that are 93 and above. And it's like, I've had wines, you know, having sold wine for a few years back in the 80s, I found wine that either didn't have a point score or was in the 80s, which was so much better, in my opinion, than wines with high scores. So how much do you put into that?
Basically, wine reviewers try to communicate to customers. Their subscribers, and so there are different ways of doing it. You could do A, B, C, D, E, F. That's kind of a broad strokes.
Right.
So Robert Parker and his Wine Advocate really popularized the 100-point scale, which
we
are all familiar with
in
grade school and high school.
Yeah.
The Brits like a 20-point scale.
Oh.
The thing is, you try to assign based on appearance, aroma, flavor, and overall, and you try to make the score reduce the wine to a number. But wine is an agricultural product.
I know.
It's a subjective product. So if you just reduce the score, you're missing out, but you're also kind of hurting. And the wines, at least in the wines with the bold fruit, big, rich wines, those tend to get higher scores. And those are the wines that are not as interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as Kermit Lynch says, who's a great wine importer, he says, you know, the wines like that, it's a drinking it is like a wrestling match.
Right.
You feel like your palate's been assaulted. 14-15% alcohol, high heavy oak, lots of fruit. And also, if you overripe fruit tastes like overripe fruit. It's all the
true.
Same. So there's a winery in California called Copain, and mm-hmm. they grow Syrah. And they got vineyards up around 2,600 feet. It's a little cooler. And so what they strive is we're going to strive for 13.5% alcohol of ripe, you know.
Right.
We're not going to over-ripen our grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple years ago, I put my nose in a glass of their Syrah, and I went, holy crap. It was like an epiphany. It tasted like Cornas. Cornas is a small appellation in the Northern Rhone.
Right.
And the wines had this kind of bacon fat, black olive, savory, herbal component.
Mm.
And I didn't know you could do that in California. You know, I thought it was illegal, in fact, you know.
Right, right.
And so that thing is, in Europe, you don't go for overripe wines mostly. Mm-hmm. And so you get these complexities, and that's what makes the wine soulful and evocative and interesting. And
wow.
So they're doing that. That is changing in California. There's a whole revolution the last 5 years with interesting grape varieties and restraining the alcohol, organic and biodynamic agriculture.
Mm.
And it's really changing the face of the smaller, more artisan wineries.
Right. Well, one of the things I've always wondered was, I've heard this thing where for women, a glass of red wine a day, and for men, two glasses. Of course, I was probably written by a man.
well,
you know, to keep you healthier. What does that?
Well, there's
do?
A different biology of men and women, and men, mm-hmm. men are bigger,
right?
And
right.
so body mass or body weight can metabolize alcohol better or
right.
hold your alcohol better. Well, red wine is good. I just saw something last night that you'd have to drink $2,700 bottles of wine a day to get whatever the. I'm not sure which chemical is the one that's protective.
Oh, resveratrol.
But red wine is good for the body.
Right, right.
Alcohol in excess is a negative. So
absolutely.
What is the balance? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to do my part. I do hear complaints from my female friends that they wish they could,
I see.
You know, drink a little more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To the diet guidelines. But, but I mean, it's also part of gracious living.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, Robert Mondavi had a pledge years ago. He said, wine is a sacred and romantic mealtime beverage mentioned in the Bible and loved by poets, philosophers, and statesmen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a part of gracious living and a part of the social compact. Wine and food are meant to be shared together with friends. And he put that on every bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Of course, the Freds freaked out. they had a battle about that, you know. But it's true. I mean, it's a social lubricant. It makes us happy. It helps conversations, and it's good for you in moderation.
Oh, that's what I heard. what is the difference? You know, why don't they mention white wine?
Well, I think the red wine you macerate when you're making the wine, you macerate the juice in the skins for longer, and so you get more.
Right.
Kind of compounds out of the skins that, mm-hmm, are, that, are, mm-hmm. that have these protective qualities. There are some studies that say alcohol in itself is protective to a certain point. So there's a lot of research going on, and there's a lot of different things being said, and it kind of gets a little confusing.
Yeah, I bet. You are listening to Your Health on 94.7 WPVC. Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking with Robert Harley of Market Street Wine Shop. And next couple of segments, we'll be talking to Janae Libby of Audacious Food Talk for Gluttons. And also, folks, if you want your wine, go to one of two locations, Market Street Wine Shop, downtown and on Market Street, obviously, and also on 29 North. Uptown. There we go.
Try to make it classy.
There you go. Yeah, downtown, uptown. It's funny if you go to Charlotte, yeah. North Carolina. Uptown is actually downtown.
So, that's funny.
It really, really interesting. We spent a year there, and it was at first rather confusing. You know, downtown. Oh, that's out in the lakes. You know, what? So
wow.
It's kind of funny. But so how's business so far? Pretty good, brisk?
Just doing okay.
Good.
Very consistent.
Glad to hear that.
Lots of loyal customers, and we really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. And do you have? I know Janae just said that she's one of the customers. I know. We go there. What I wanted to ask another question.
So many questions.
Oh, that's it. Do you have any sort of, you know, loyalty, or is it a volume discounts or anything like that for folks?
Well, we've toyed with a kind of a loyalty program, but it's always a little confusing as to how to operate it.
Right.
You know, case discounts.
Well, I knew you had your case, right. Oh, and six as well.
Yeah. So okay. we try to be as friendly to the consumer as possible, give them opportunities to save when they purchase a little more.
And I know you have tastings every week, don't you?
Actually, 4 days a week.
4 days a week.
Yeah. Two beer tastings and two wine tastings.
Oh, there you go. So you can find out which ones you want before you try them, before you buy it.
Got the website and the Facebook page, and
there you go.
They're all there, and we have a lot of fun.
Is the website marketstreetwine.com? Or
you got it, Mike.
Okay, awesome. And what about I know we do. I know you have an email chain that you
email
get
list
emails.
Every week. We send out a weekly newsletter We're actually making it more interesting starting next week.
Oh, that is great. That is great.
Extra articles to it each week. So,
and I might add, they are one of our sponsors here at WPVC.
Proud sponsors.
There we go. Got to put that on there too. Yeah. So what do you find the next trend? Is there anything that people would like to know about as far as what? What, is there anything coming that's exciting or
Well, there's this
new
explosion of variety. And people, winemakers, are planting great varieties that you may not have heard of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are something like 3,000 or 4,000 different varieties of grapes.
Oh, my.
Most people know 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're finding grape varieties that, you know, people know the international Cabernet Merlot Chardonnay, but there are many other grape varieties specifically planted in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
In less known regions that are now being planted here in Virginia and in California. In fact, one of my favorite white wines from Virginia is a Gruner Veltliner, which is an Austrian grape.
Oh, okay.
It's the grape that's making Austria famous.
Mm-hmm.
And Jump Mountain, my friends and customers, David and Mary, tiny little small production, and it's excellent.
What about local Virginia wine? Local Virginia wines? I know that we have several in this area.
Yeah. Well, they're in the valley,
and
Early Mountain has done a small production of a Naturally Pétillant or Petnat Rosé of Syrah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're finally just sold out of it, but it's cloudy because it's unfiltered, and it's
right.
A little bit sparkling.
Okay.
And it's a winemaker, one of the winemaker projects. So mm-hmm. Doing something fun and different. A King family has just done an orange wine, which means you macerate the white wine on the grape skins, and you get a kind of orangey, coppery color to it, and more flavor, and more protective, whatever things that are in the grape skins. And so you're seeing a lot more innovation, a lot more different things being done. So just, you know, when you're at your Virginia section, just look around a little bit and look for something different.
Yeah, that's really good. Great that we're actually able to grow something other than
I always say vive la différence.
Yeah, right? Vive la différence.
I mean, you know,
it's true. You know, most people think that, you know, when they think of Virginia, they think of the juice grapes, you know, just
right.
Oh, yeah, you know,
right.
Regular juice as opposed to wine, you know.
Right.
And I know my brother-in-law out in Afton, he makes wine.
Cool.
It's actually pretty good, you know, so it can happen, you know, it can happen. Thanks, Robert.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate you being here.
Love it.
Just, you know, anytime, let me know and we'll get you back on here. Awesome.
Yeah. I need to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So just let me know.
I will.
And we're going to take a little break here. We'll be back after this with Janae Libby. And here we go. We are back.
Hello, hello.
Hey, how are you, Janae?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear you?
not really. Oh, no, really? There we go.
Ah, much better. Let's see. You are on. Try again.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Oh, that's, there we go. Okay, we're on. Awesome. We're back here at To Your Health, 94.7 WPVC, Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. Resistance Radio. We've been talking with Robert Harley of Market Street Wine Shop, and we are now graced.
Ah, thank you.
Janae Libby. Janae, you have your podcast, Audacious Food Talk for Gluttons.
Yes, yes.
And before we get into that, tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, well, I do want to say I really enjoyed that conversation with Robert.
And, yes.
2 minutes in, I'm thinking, wow, I need to have him on. Because I didn't realize he was from Market Street Wine Shop when we met out in the hall, and we go there all the time.
Right.
The tastings are terrific.
I know.
The selection's amazing. And he is the perfect type of guest for my podcast because that's what I do. I interview people who do the work of food. And my family is from Virginia. I grew up in Richmond, but both parents are from the Shenandoah Valley. And I got an interest in food very early on from my family. And I really enjoy writing about it and learning the stories of folks, how they got the passion to do what they do, what their day is like, what their process is like. I learn something every time, every episode.
And I bet after you finish, you want to eat.
Yeah, I do. I do. It's funny you say that, especially I try and do research before I interview a guest. Like I interviewed No Bull Burger, for example. And so as research, I had to go buy some and try them.
Of course.
And after interviewing them, I'm a rabid fan. It's something, the interview almost adds another layer to my experience. Once I know their story, I become their champion and want to eat their product.
Understand.
Especially if it's very good.
Sure.
Which theirs is. It's fantastic.
Oh, good. Awesome.
Yeah.
So that's how you got started. I went on your website, by the way, folks. Go on our website. It's absolutely, and it is Janae Libby.
Yes.
Yes. I saw where your goal, and this made so much sense, was to bridge the social media gap from just folks talking about other folks in the food business to talking with those people about the work of food.
Exactly.
And as a former catering chef, I certainly understand that because about the presentation, about the preparation, you know, the ingredients and all that. So what is your, when you say the work of food, is that part of it or?
Yeah, I've been a food writer for, a dedicated food writer for almost a dozen years.
Oh my.
I've been a writer my entire life. I gravitated toward writing about food about a dozen years ago. And I got really tired of Yelp and sites where folks just focus on the finished product. They look, you know, they go to a restaurant, they have a pretty plate of food, they take a picture of it, they put it on Instagram. Then something happens and they decide that the experience was terrible. They go home and they write a vitriolic review on Yelp, and they're done.
Yeah.
And I got upset. It was almost a slow burn because I know these chefs. I've become friends with them. My husband and I eat out quite a bit. They work extremely hard all day, every day. They do not get a break.
Yep.
There's always something going on. There's always something happening. And it was almost a, how dare they do this? So I wanted to step in and bridge the gap, as you said, and talk to people face to face, because I feel like you have better conversations than if you're on Skype or on a phone or emailing or texting, an old-fashioned face-to-face conversation with people that do the work of food.
That's true.
And we go down a lot of rabbit holes. I've had people tell me, well, I'm not really interested in learning about food, so I don't listen. And we really discuss a lot of deep life questions, philosophies. There's something for everybody.
That's
there.
Great.
I talked with Todd Grieger, who was the chef at Red Pump Kitchen, and our conversation veered off into, what is your definition of success? How in your career do you know when you've made it? And what if your definition doesn't fit with society's definition or your culture's definition? Then what? And it was amazing. I mean, I left the conversation thinking, that is what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
That, if I could have every episode be like that one, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, well, you know, success is, to me, is being, I won't say satisfied, but just know that whatever it is you're doing is not only contributing to others, and you know that by the response you get from others, but also expanding your knowledge and your horizons. And when you put your head on the pillow at night, when you know you've done everything you can do, and you can put a smile on your face and get a peaceful sleep, That's success right there.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter about money or any of that sort of thing.
Exactly. For me too. Mm-hmm. I love it when I learn things, when I feel like we got past the typical journalistic questions, the back and forth, you know, what do you do? Why do you do it? And also when I feel like a connection's been made.
Mm-hmm.
Like
the connection, that's huge.
Yes. I walk out and go, wow, I just made a new friend. I interviewed Gail Hobbs Page at Paramount.
Love her.
Left and thought, well, we're friends now.
There you go.
We're going to be hanging out because she's so cool.
And that adds to your health.
Yes.
You know, is an asset to your health. And that's what, you know, of course, that's what we're about here.
Exactly.
You know, trying to be healthy. And now, I noticed that there are many more people, and of course, this is due to the demand, that are sourcing as much local food, properly raised, sustainably raised food as possible, obviously, when it's in season.
Sure.
And of course, you have Michael Clark out at Planet Earth Diversified, mm-hmm. who we've had here on the show, has his greenhouses all year. So he has a lot of his microgreens are in season all year.
Yeah, he does a great job.
He does a great job.
I need to have him on.
Yeah, he would be a great person to talk to. Have you noticed a lot of the other restaurants? I know you've had, I know Hamilton's, one of our sponsors, sources a good amount of their food. Maya Restaurant, another one of our sponsors, they source as much local as they can.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed other restaurants?
They try to. Mm-hmm. It's definitely trendy, and it's definitely important. There are restaurants in town. I know Three Penny Cafe.
Three Penny, right. I saw that podcast.
Yeah. Jeff is very committed to doing that. And a little while ago, they took on that task mm-hmm. and made it their
mm-hmm.
mission.
Mm-hmm.
Harrison Keevil at Brookville was sourcing 90% of his ingredients locally.
Oh, my.
Brookville has since closed, but they now own and operate Keevil and Keevil Grocery.
Mm.
He and his wife, Jennifer. I call it a grocerant.
Grocerant.
Yeah, it's in Belmont. It's right where the old Gibson's Grocery
used
to be.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
And you can go in for breakfast and buy biscuits. They've just started a brunch service,
mm-hmm,
I see.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do a little bit of catering. So it's kind of a catch-all, but they source many of their products locally. The thing with sourcing locally, though, it's not easy for restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very expensive. It's more expensive to source locally. It takes more effort. It takes more planning. And when you have a bottom line, when your restaurant needs to stay solvent and stay mm-hmm. open, it becomes more difficult. And I've interviewed many chefs who they say, well, we want to, but. So it's the reality. And I hate it when you have the local, what I call the local food police. And they go around and say, well, I saw a Cisco truck behind your restaurant. What are you doing? And there's instances where folks are saying, yes, we source 100% local, and they really don't. Because they know that it will bring in more customers, because customers like to see that sign in the window. I don't know that that's happened here, but I did read a piece about a section of Florida where that was happening on a regular basis. So there are a lot of gray areas when it comes to buying local, but it is the ultimate goal because the food is fresher. It comes to you more directly, more in season. So it's going to taste better and be better for you.
And it keeps the money here in town.
Exactly.
Which is I think is very important. Yeah. It's one of our battle cries, yes, if you will, here.
Yes.
And you know,
companies like Cisco use local producers.
I also saw that as well.
I know that I'm not sure Noble is with them anymore, but I know at one time Noble was Cisco was using Noble burgers to distribute to UVA Hospital, mm-hmm, UVA cafeterias, different private schools in the area. So there's some overlap. Mm-hmm. There's some overlap. It's not all black and white.
Right.
There's a lot to talk about.
Well,
obviously.
Yeah, obviously. Now, I've also seen where UVA is through their demand, and the local food summit has gotten Aramark to source a good number of local foods in some of their cafeterias.
Yes, and that's fantastic.
It is fantastic.
That's fantastic.
It's the demand.
I interviewed a young man, John Hernandez, mm-hmm, and oh, the name of his beef farm is going to escape me. I'm so sorry, but it's in Bristol, Virginia. Mm-hmm. He's a student here at UVA, and he started a nonprofit where he takes students around for a certain amount of money, mm-hmm, and he has them tour farms, beef farms. And he takes the money that he collects from these students and he uses it to buy local grass-fed beef so that folks who can't afford it can enjoy it. And I just love him. He's a wonderful advocate for his family farm in Bristol, as well as giving those folks a chance to eat healthy grass-fed beef that might not necessarily be able to because of cost. And that was an amazing podcast. And I hope there are more young people out there like him. He describes himself as a Carhartt kid in a North Face world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I love that quote. I'm like, dude, you got to get that on a T-shirt because that's fantastic. Because he's got his Carhartt jacket for you folks that aren't farmers. That's your workhorse coat that you wear when you walk the fields and milk the cows and whatever. And he's surrounded by UVA students wearing, you know, $800 North Face. So he's a great kid.
M. Tierra grass-fed finished beef.
Yes,
and
yes.
That's it. M. Tierra grass-fed finished in Bristol, Virginia. John Hernandez.
Yes. And his father, Saul, and mother, Joanna. I just love them.
Oh, my.
It's their family farm. They're making it work.
Yeah.
And they are immigrants.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
from Venezuela.
Oh, my.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Let me throw that in there.
Absolutely.
Because we are on the progressive station.
Thank you so much. You are listening to WPVC. The show is To Your Health. I'm MC Blair. We're talking with Janae Libby. And we are the progressive voice of Charlottesville and most recently the Resistance Radio.
Resistance.
And this is Resistance. Vive la. And we will be back after these. Hey, how are you? We're back. I think you can hear me. Can you hear me? Oh, good.
I can hear you.
Awesome. Always have to ask that, you know, right here. But, I also wanted to remind our listeners, we are giving away a sample pack of Speedy Bee's Energy Bars.
Oh,
we
nice.
had B. Arnt, the baker here last week, and she and her husband do this Speedy Bee's Energy Bars. They're absolutely fabulous. And so anybody listening out there, I'm going to take the third person who emails me. Our phones aren't set up to take phone calls during the show. But if you could email me at mc@mcblair.com. That's mc@mcblair.com. Just email me, and the third email that I get, we will give you that that gift pack, that Speedy Bee's Energy Bars. They are good, folks. We are talking to Janae Libby here on To Your Health, and she is also just so many things you do, so many great things you do.
Busy
also,
bee.
Yeah, you're also on the board of Festival of the Book.
Oh, I wish. Not on the board.
Not the board. Sorry, guys.
Maybe after all the hustle I do this year, they'll put me on the board.
Put you on the board. What is your official involvement with them?
I'm volunteering with them as a community partner to help increase attendance at their food events.
Oh, good.
because they started, Martha Stafford at the Charlottesville Cooking School mm-hmm. has been working with the book festival for years. And a few years back, they started offering cooking demos at the school. They had a couple of cookbook authors in town for the festival, and they were so well attended that the festival organizer said, we need to increase this.
Excellent.
They reached out to me and to Elizabeth Stark of Brooklyn mm-hmm. Supper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a blogger, very famous blogger that moved here from Brooklyn with her husband, Brian.
Oh, my.
Great blog. Uh-huh. Really good blog.
What's that called?
It's called Brooklyn Supper.
Brooklyn Supper.
She highlights seasonal produce mm-hmm. and recipes. Her photography is stunning. Love her recipes. Love her blog. Just a really, really great read.
Mm-hmm.
And so the group of us sat down and figured out how we could increase the offerings of food writing, which I was incredibly excited about because I am a champion of the genre. I feel it's underappreciated. It should have more shelf space at mm-hmm. Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say food writing, that does not mean cookbooks.
Not cookbooks. You know, I actually brought some books here. Botany of Desire by Michael Pollan.
Yes.
The Unsettling of America by Wendell Berry.
Yes.
He has another one, Bringing It to the Table.
Yes.
And then, of course, T. Colin Campbell, Ph.D., Whole. He was also the author of The China Study. Rather controversial, but a good read.
Yeah, right, right.
And then one of my favorites by Dr. Terry Walls, Minding My Mitochondria. So these are all books about food.
Yes.
Some of them mention food as medicine. Some of them talk about the fight that we have with the corporate food system.
Yes.
But so tell me a little more about, you know, your, you know, writing about food and why does that, why
sure.
is that interesting
sure.
to you?
Well, food writing to me is one of the most diverse genres out there because food is such a touchstone and a beginning for so many topics. The books you have, they're scientific in nature about the body and health.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Pollan is very political. So you can, if you like politics, you can read about food politics. You can read about the history of food. I read a fantastic book called Pawpaw,
mm-hmm.
and it was the history of this native fruit. It's a Native American fruit that you forage. You can grow it. It's very easy to grow, but a lot of people don't know about it. It's been around for hundreds of years. It tastes like a combination between a banana and a papaya.
Huh.
It is green. It has big seeds. It grows on the side of the road, and it is very prevalent in Virginia in the fall.
Right. I've heard. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so fascinating stuff.
That is fascinating.
Memoir. Mm-hmm. People write about their, you know, past with food. Maybe they have had food issues in the past, or they have good memories about a cake they ate. You know, Marcel Proust wrote about a madeleine in the 1800s that he bit into, and it brought back a whole slew of memories and resulted in 800 pages of his series.
Wow.
You guys are going to know the name out there, and I have old brain and can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And the best piece of food writing I read last year was called Stir.
Stir.
Yes. This woman had a brain aneurysm at 28. She was a baker, and she lost her sense of taste.
Oh, my.
And smell.
Oh.
What happens when that happens? And she wrote about it in such a way, it just broke me in half. It was incredible writing. So with one topic, there are so many different avenues you can go down.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what genre you enjoy, food writing has it.
Yeah.
It really does.
Well, I mean, and you know, food is so family oriented. And,
yes.
and I know I spent time in Europe, specifically Spain and Italy, and, you know, of course, the shops over there shut down in the middle of the day because they're main meal is in the middle of the day.
Absolutely.
You know, and
yeah.
they, I mean, we're talking 3 and 4 hours
yeah.
of sitting at the table
yeah.
and having tapas, basically, you know, a little bit, like in Italy, I went and my girlfriend took me to her family and it was this big table. Of course, I spoke about 12 words of Italian.
Yeah.
More after that,
Yeah.
And they brought out these stuffed shells, and I figured, oh, good, that's the main dish, right? So I put three or four on my plate.
No, that's
they
the
were
secondo.
All, they were looking and smiling and giggling and stuff, and wait till he sees the antipasto dish followed by the salad followed by the roast chicken followed by more salad, more antipasto dish followed by the roast beef.
Yeah,
I mean it was just on and on and on.
Yeah.
And it was like, are you kidding me? When I said tapas, excuse me, many courses.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was about 3 hours that we spent there. And I thoroughly enjoyed myself, even though I didn't speak much English. So, much Italian. But, and it's about family. That's their main meal.
See, my Italian's so bad. I want to say the fare la niente. It's like they have the Italian idea. It's the art of doing nothing. The art of doing nothing. Just being.
That
just
is great.
Being with family, with friends, with wine, with food.
Yeah.
And so you have your own food memory and food experience. That experience stuck with you and you've remembered it.
Yes.
And you could write about it. And people would connect with it. I sat here and talked about Stir, and that evoked a memory of food in your own
mind. It did. You're right. I see that.
Which is why this genre is so amazing, because people connect over food. Everybody eats.
Yeah.
Even if they have food limitations, they still sit down to eat
right.
at least once a day. We hope.
And that's the thing. For optimum health, I've found that to sit down with the family, it's just, you can just, sometimes you sit down with the family and you wish they weren't there, but
right.
That's a whole other thing. Right. Exactly. But in most cases to sit down, you become closer.
Yes.
And when you're closer, you feel better, you're healthier. I mean, that's just, it's all in there,
At last year's festival, I moderated a panel with Bridget Lacey, who wrote a book called Sunday Dinner.
Aww.
And it's a book, it's a collection of recipes, but in her preface, she explains that Sunday dinner should begin on Saturday with the family shopping together, gathering the ingredients, setting the intention of making this an experience, because it's not just about the meal. It's about everything around the meal. And then maybe cook together. Maybe get to, after church on Sunday after you read the paper, if you don't go to church, get those ingredients that you gathered on Saturday and spend some time making this meal and then sitting down. And you're creating memories. You're creating experiences. And that's good for health. It's good for your health.
I just had something flash through my mind. And we talk about getting to know your local farmers here on this show and, around. And just imagine you even if only one adult family member, either mom or dad, hopefully both, grabs one or two of the kids and you go to a local farm to buy your produce.
Yes.
Or your meat.
Yeah.
Or both, because a lot of times you'll see, farms are kind of close together sometimes in a community, and you can go to like three different farms, buy everything for the meal, like you said, go there on Saturday, or go to the city market
on when
it's open, April
so
through December.
Yeah.
And just, they'll have fun. And it's a family time, can be a family time, rather than one person run out and go, oh, okay, I'll be back, whatever. It's like going to the grocery store. Heck with that. But even if you go to the grocery store, go with the family.
Yeah, involve the kids, involve the family, make it an experience. Growing up, what you just mentioned, we went to the berry farm every spring. I mean, we did. And sometimes we didn't want to go. Sometimes when we got to be teenagers, we didn't want to go. Mom made us go.
Yeah.
But that stuck with me. And, now I do it too. I get peaches and I get apples. And
tradition.
Exactly. It's creating those good habits, those good traditions that you remember and carry with you.
Yeah. The funny thing happened on the way to the farm. Food, glorious food,
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's excellent. You are listening to Your Health here on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and more recently, Resistance Radio. We're talking to Janae Libby She has a wonderful podcast out there, folks. It's called Edacious. It's Food Talk for Gluttons. And I know I see the word glutton out here and I say, wait a minute, isn't that one of the seven deadly sins?
Yeah, of course.
And of course, we don't champion actual gluttony here. We're just, that's.
Oh, come on.
That's
why
sort
not?
I'm going to eat till I can't move. No.
Right. Well, edacious is a vintage word that means ravenous or passionate or hungry. Some people use it with regard to time. Time is audacious. It gets eaten up quickly. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And I wanted to use a word like that because I'm not a foodie. I'm not a snob. Uh-huh. I love a good cart hot dog, dirty water hot dog, just like the next person. I love some convenience store nachos sometimes. Mm-hmm. That's probably not to your health.
No.
But I do believe all moderation is also should be done in moderation.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's got to be times when you just.
There are. Actually, one of the best meals I ever had. And folks, I got to tell you, I'm one of these guys that used to go to the buffet and I would eat. I would say the only way that I can get the value for my dollar is to eat till I can't eat anymore, And I would do that. And honestly, it was painful.
Yeah.
Literally painful.
Yeah, that's bad.
But the best meal, one of the best meals.
Maybe once in a while.
Yeah, one of the best meals I've ever had in my life was at a restaurant, unfortunately now closed, Charlie Trotter's in Chicago. Hard to get a reservation. I happen to know an executive chef from one of the other stores there in Chicago, and he got reservations. And it was small portions. It was 8 courses. And, of course, we had a glass of wine with everyone. I was certainly not stuffed, but it was, as I told my friend, he asked me, what did I think? And I said, it was like a symphony of tastes.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And that's what it was.
That's nice.
And Charlie would get the most fresh, most healthy ingredients. Unfortunately, he has passed very early, unfortunately. Yeah. For all of us.
Yeah.
And his use of fresh ingredients and spices just was a symphony of taste.
Yeah.
So there you go. You don't have to eat, so much to be totally satisfied.
Right.
And it was not cheap.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But so there's a kind of
there's levels.
Exactly.
All levels of eating.
There are.
Yeah.
There really are.
Yeah.
And of course we stress as much as we can, local and, sustainably grown food, which of course, is devoid of, minimal, pesticide, and of course the fertilizers are natural fertilizers and there's no chemical fertilizers in there. And that's obviously good for us.
Right.
But there are some times that, you do have to, you get that craving.
Yeah, that's true.
When I do though, I try to get polyface hot dogs, grass fed beef and all that, when I can.
Right.
And I've actually stopped eating bread. So that's how it is, and that again, that's from the wheat. We're gonna bring it to a close here.
Yeah,
and
can I mention some of the events?
Oh,
at the,
please
at the
do.
Festival?
I should have asked you some of the events and when this starts and all that.
Yeah,
please do.
The Virginia Festival of the Book, guys, is March 22nd through the 26th. I will be moderating a panel called "Save Room: Cookbooks with a Sweet Tooth." At Barnes & Noble on the 22nd at 4 o'clock with Sherry Castle, who wrote a book called Rhubarb, and Ronnie Lundy, who wrote a book called Vittles. And
oh, wow.
Her cookbook, Seed Saver Bill Best called it the 67th book of the Bible. It is about Appalachian foodways. It just won Cookbook of the Year by the International Association of Culinary Professionals.
And what's the name of that again?
Vittles.
Vittles.
It's spelled victuals,
right?
But if you're from Appalachia, you say Vittles.
And that is Appalachia, Vittles. Folks.
And these ladies, they're good friends. They are full of stories. Mm-hmm. They have been all over, and will be a rip-roaring time. Ashley Christensen will also be here. Mm-hmm. She's the chef at From Pool's Diner in Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
And on Sunday at the library, I think it starts at 1 o'clock, the Best American Food Writing panel. There will be 5 authors from that anthology, including Todd Kleiman, Jason Tesoro, who else? Oh, Joe Yonan from the Washington Post. If you read food writing, you know these names,
right.
And they are all excellent. And I will be putting up a podcast a day starting next Thursday, the 16th, to get everybody excited.
Awesome. Awesome.
How did I do?
Hey, you did great.
Did I get my spiel?
You had something else there, I think. Something else I wanted you to say.
What else?
About the book, about Festival of the Book.
Go to vabook.org and look for the tag Food, Wine, Travel for all the offerings, because there are cooking demos at the cooking school with Ronnie Lundy and Sherry Castle.
Oh, that's be fun.
Yeah, there's one on wild edibles. There's a guy that wrote a book called Foraging for Wild Edibles. So,
you know, you mentioned that, and that's great. I was just talking to Heidi Reed of One Forest, and that is a program she started. And it's taking kids into the forest.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And showing them, you know, not only the wild stuff, but having actually a farm that is in the forest that they actually gather, plant, and so that you have.
That's so cool.
You know, wonderful produce that is native to forests that can be grown in the forest.
Yeah.
And it teaches these kids. All this, and obviously, anytime you educate children, they become more informed adults and pass it down, just like you were saying about, you know, going shopping and all that. It's tradition, and it just starts this whole tradition. We're going to have her on here as well.
Oh,
but
great.
That's one of the wild edibles are just a fabulous
I will listen,
thing
and
to
I
do.
Will
yeah.
call so her
I'll
up
let,
and say,
I'll let
hey.
You know. Yeah, absolutely.
We'll just trade guests here back and forth. That's
great. Well, you know, it's time for my two-minute drill. you know, before we sign off here, we actually got started a little bit late, so we can go over a little bit.
There you go.
I'm going to get back on my thing here and say we must realize that the factory food system is designed to enrich the corporations behind them without regard to the American people. The result of this profit-first mentality is, as we've said before, a nation filled with overweight, nutritionally starved, sickly people, which put a drain on the healthcare system, leading to offspring with increasingly lower IQs due to the poisons allowed in our fruits, vegetables, and meats. And I always say, why is this even legal? You know, how many of our community members do we have to sacrifice before we wake up and take action necessary to take care of our own? Now, we have the programs in place right here. We can provide a healthy life, giving local, a life-giving local food chain. We must join together in this endeavor by volunteering, making donations, and generally supporting these worthy organizations. Now, we've had some guests here on To Your Health, and the central theme is community-based agriculture and meats raised on life-sustaining soil. We give you the guidelines and reference materials to help you learn why this is so important. Now, folks, just look up Local Food Justice Network and volunteer to help when you can. We must help in the production of food and soil health instead of only being a consumer. Your life and your family's lives depend on this, and they'll improve. You'll be healthier, have more energy, which will lead to fewer copays, less doctor visits, plus a stronger community with theoretically less crime. Because when people of different cultures, religions, and skin colors work together, fear dissipates. And let's face it, fearful, paranoid people are prone to hate others and fight amongst themselves. I'm thanking Robert Harley of Market Street Wine Shops and Janae Livy for joining us today. Thanks, Janae.
Yes, thank you so much.
And remember, folks, eating real food is the key to your health.
You've been listening to Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.